Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Overtime Sports Show with Mike Wood, coming to you live from the greatest city on the planet, Durham, North Carolina, on this, the third day of August, 2016. Once again, co-host Linda Van Smith on the air with us also. And tonight, like I announced last night, it's strictly we're taking sports off the table, and we're going to the community part of our program, which we do from time to time, to talk about some very, very serious subjects going on around the country. And right now, we have one that is just, in my opinion, getting just totally, totally out of control. The relationship between our police officers all over the nation and its citizens. To me, it seems like it's just going off the rails. Basically, you have people declaring war, these sick individuals declaring war on the police department. I mean, you have where a 17-year-old kid earlier this week, called in a 911 call, which, of course, is going to bring a police officer to wherever that the need for service is, and then they ambushed him. You have Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where you ambush cops, not to mention what happened in Dallas, Texas, which was just, I mean, that was just something I'd never see in my entire life. And you have parents that are scared for their children to go out now and drive cars, and they have to tell them, you know, how to, police officers are telling people how to approach them. Well, you know, here's the problem I have with that, you know. I can't understand how I can be taught to approach an individual, one individual, different than the other. All you have to be taught is the word respect, and it's going to work in every situation. I mean, okay, you get stopped driving a car. The police officer is going to come up, and he's going to ask for your driver's license and registration and things like that. There's no need to call him MF, SOB, and all that stuff when you're the one that's actually out there, you know, breaking the law. In some cases, it does turn to harassment. Those are the bad cops they need to weed out. But for the most part, it's just a routine traffic stop. Sir, your tail light is out. Sir, this is out. Just get it fixed. You know, but they're approached with a lot of anger. So tonight what we're going to do, we're going to talk about this with North Carolina Central University Chief of Police Odetta Johnson. And we're going to, you know, she has an extensive police background, second generation police officer. She's worked her way through the ranks. So good afternoon, Chief. How are you doing this evening?
Good evening. Thank you for having me on your show this evening.
Well, I tell you what, this is a very important topic to me. Like I said, my father was a police officer for a lot of years. He worked his way back in the 60s. He worked his way from a part-time police officer all the way up to being an assistant chief back at a time when people that looked like us did not get those opportunities. And it was really, and I can tell you from the family point of view, it was really a rough time, but he worked his way up through the ranks, and he became the assistant chief. I have a son who's a police officer right now. Me, myself, I went to juvenile justice. So, you know, I have a kind of a uniqueness about both police, being on the police side of it and the civilian side of it. So tell our listening audience about your background and what led you to North Carolina Central.
Well, my background, I'm the product of a police officer and a correction officer. My father spent numerous years in policing. He started in the late 70s. As a matter of fact, I'm excited to say that they'll be naming a park after him in Richmond, Virginia, for the work that he did in community policing. I was introduced to service at an early age. My mom retired over 3 decades of service in corrections. And so I had an opportunity early on to start working in the community. I remember my father talked so much about we need to solve this crime beyond arrest, make an arrest. And so it was something planted in me early about service, working in the community, because we all talk about what's wrong, but not too often we are solution-based about what can be done correctly. How can we make our community better? Because when you think about it, when you talk about community, hopefully you're talking about a group of people that want the same things. You want to feel safe. You want to feel comfortable in the environment you're in, and hopefully you want to give back to the community that you're working in. You want it to look a certain way, then you have to be a part of it. So what led me to North Carolina Central University, I'm an alumna. I attended there from 1986 to 1990, and after I had an extensive career with the military, traveling nationally and internationally and building communities and working with the Richmond Police Department in Richmond, Virginia, where I retired after 25 years, I said, hey, I can take all this training and go back and invest in my university once I found out that they had a position available.
Yeah, I tell you, that's, you know, you said something really interesting about a police officer. I asked my dad one day, was sitting there talking about police work, and I said, Dad, what is a good day for a police officer? I said, I understand coming home at the end of the shift is a very good day, but what is a good day? Is it making arrests or is it not making arrests? And he sat there and looked at me. He said that making an arrest is for the individual. He had to take it individually, take each one of them individually. Making an arrest for a person that is really, really badly hooked on drugs is a good thing for that person. Because then in the old days when the system worked a little better, you could put them in a position where they could actually get help for their addiction if they want it. So you're still giving them, even though there was an arrest, you're still getting choices about how to correct their life and not let that little bump in the road destroy their life. As a matter of fact, it can turn into a helpful thing. And then those arrests you have to make because, well, you just have to make them. You know what I'm saying? It's just one of those kind of things. So he said, I guess it all depends on the issue at hand or the person at hand or, you know, just the situation itself. So, you know, that's what do you think about it? Do you think that, a good day for a police officer in community policing is helping out the community or making an arrest within the community? Which could be
Now, when we're looking today, before that was good, now it's doing something proactive for the community. If you find out you're making a lot of arrests for people with suspended license, then you need to go in that community and partner with DMV and say, hey, let's give a class on how you can get your license restored. Now it's all about building connections with the community. So police officers are playing roles that haven't necessarily been traditional. If you find out that you're having a lot of cases where there are sexual assaults or aggravated assaults and there are problems with mediation, there are problems about dating, then you have to hook up with the social services. You have to start bringing in people and programs into the community, and traditionally that has not been the role of law enforcement. And that's another reason why I'm attracted to campus policing, because I have that opportunity to look at each residential hall as an individual community. I can divide the university in different sections, and I have a chance to relate to young minds at an early age, finding out, not necessarily, because that's how we keep the crime down, finding out what challenges and issues they're having. Because think about it, they're coming from all over the country, and we have some international students. So they're at that point where we can do policing at its best. So a good day now is proactively looking at the needs of the community, connecting and talking to them and not just thinking that everything's about arrest, and finding out what it is to get a buy-in from them, and at the end, seeing a difference in the community you're serving. I know this year we had quite a few people doing protests and vigils, but the thing that was exciting for me on my campus is that they were talking about an action plan afterwards. It wasn't just about getting a picture on social media, although that's good too for awareness. We had voter awareness in March. We had a protest vigil about three young Muslim men who were killed execution style in Indiana. It had nothing to do specifically with our campus other than the fact that our students were aware. We had a mosque in a 3,000 block of Fayetteville Street, and we are aware of our community surrounding us. We even had, when they were talking about the McDonald's disparity wage, they decided to choose our campus after they were protesting and marching in other places to have this conversation. That's what is a good day for me, when my community, our community on that campus is aware of what's going on, not just on our campus, but surrounding our campus from a local and an international, not just national level, and saying we want a voice. We want a part of what's going on.
Yeah, because I went back to Central. I was at Central before you were, and you know, having a voice, having a way of protesting and speaking out was not always necessarily the part of the HBCU, so to speak, because it was one of those things where you could speak out, but only on what the administration thought was necessary for you to speak out on back in those days. You know, if we want to talk about now, let's just say, I don't know what topic now, we want to talk about Black Lives Matter, for instance, and the administration didn't think that that was something that we should be dealing with, then it would be squashed. But nowadays, it's a free and open exercise of ideas, which makes everything work a whole lot better and a whole lot smoother. And like you said, now we can develop a plan of action because we're talking with each other. We're not talking at each other. We're not sitting here fighting the administration and then fighting other people in the street, too. We come together as one free flow of ideas, and then we can get something solved. Well, with everything that's going on in the country right now, how did you think that the police department and the citizens itself can work better together? You know, I feel like there should be a better screening process for police officers. I feel like in some communities that they do get police officers, but they get what they can get because they don't have a whole lot of applications, and they kind of settle for not the first-tier guy, the second-tier guy, but the third- and fourth-tier guy that's been moved from somewhere else who was a problem there and then moved into a position or got a position somewhere else, and, of course, that's going to follow him. A duck is not going to stop quacking because it goes from North Carolina to South Carolina. It's still going to quack. It may have a southern twang to it, but it's going to quack. So how do you feel that the police and the community can work better together to solve some of these major issues that are going on right now?
One of the things is we have to work together. You can't. The recruiting challenge is a challenge that's going on internationally. The problem is that a lot of our programs, whether it's the Police Athletic Lead, the Explore Post program, whether we're dealing with external units like Boy Scouts of America, we need to work together. If we can target groups in elementary school age to build prisons, we can target groups to help them become leaders in the community that they're growing up in. And you have to start early. So when you start early, developing relationships and having them see the programs that you have, whether you're having a citizen academy or a student academy where people can come in and see what policing is all about. Because during my career, I've done everything from forensics, economic crimes, internal affairs. I've had an awesome time undercover prostitution doing organized crime. Not that that was the best assignment, but I'm just saying I had various assignments, and a lot of people don't even know what goes on in the police department. So if we want to be better partners and we want to recruit better people, we have to start early. We have to start grabbing them and helping develop them by providing mentors. I know the department I left in Richmond, Virginia, one of the things, they had the young adult police commissioners, and Chief Brian Norwood brought that to the department, but we were already dealing with mentoring programs, and we had a cadet program. But what was so great about the police program that we had at that department, we didn't care if you became a police officer, we just wanted you to become a leader. And over 90% of those kids went to college, and we had a few to come back, not necessarily to our department, but they wanted to be in policing. If you don't see who you want around the table, it's the same thing when you start doing internal promotions. You have to start training those people early and providing opportunities for them, because they're not just going to pop up out of anywhere. But I don't think it's just policing. A lot of careers are finding difficulties in finding people who are not on drugs, who are not suffering from mental challenges where they're choosing not to take their medication, or suffering from some type of issue where they cannot work full-time, or dealing with people who no longer want to retire. They just want to move from job to job. So the high turnover rate is not just in law enforcement. But I'm saying the challenge for all of us, for each person, when you look at yourself as an individual and we're saying, what are we going to do about this issue about having more leaders and having better people in law enforcement, we have to start mentoring. We have to stop looking for funding, because sometimes you're going to have to do it for free for the outcome of having better officers, better firefighters, you know, better teachers. We have to start early investing in our children. Something as small as I just celebrated my 30th high school class reunion, And our class decided, well, if the school system is cutting back funding, we're going to provide snacks, water and snacks for the kids while they're taking SOL training. We're also going to have people available to assist them in after-school programs to help them with their work, providing meals and work with the local churches. So I say all this to say it is a problem with who we're recruiting and how we're recruiting them, but now we have to start looking early, elementary school age, middle school age, and start developing those. But in the meantime, we need to go with our best practices of bringing people in. If they don't make the cut, they just don't make the cut.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing I really like about police officers. I have not seen one in my lifetime that does not take time, no matter how busy they are. I mean, they could be busy, and police officers get, believe in me, you me, ladies and gentlemen, police officers get real busy. They'll sit down and take the time with that child because it could be that one child that they took that 5 minutes with that's going to click in their head, and that's going to be the future police officer or future president or future lawyer, whatever it is, you know, just that few minutes. And that's what I really appreciate about police officers. They always will sit down. They have time for anybody, but they especially make time for children because they realize that's really very important to leave a good impression on them. Lydia, you have some questions for Chief?
I do. Officer and Sara Johnson, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Sara.
That's good. I do have a question.
Uh-oh, here we go again. Lord have mercy.
Well, I didn't know that prior to getting on the conversation, but it's good to know.
Yeah,
everywhere.
That is correct, everywhere. Yeah, now I do concur with what you said about we have to start early in order to, you know, mentor our students for success and respect for others, because that's vitally important, and it needs to start. I'm a middle school teacher, and it does need to start in elementary school, but I find that a lot of teachers don't take the time to work with our students, particularly our African-American students. They say it's not their job, but it is their job, because what happens is after a while, you know, if they don't take the time to, you know, help students in that capacity, then students become their behavior sometimes gets out of hand, and then they don't know what to do with the child. So what they do is they write students up, and they get sent to the office all the time. And so that leads to other things. So, you know, it does need to start early with that. But my question to you is, now, last year Durham had 1,870 reported incidences of homicide, rape, robbery, and aggressive assault. What do you think needs to happen to possibly curb these incidences?
Well, I do know from the short period of time that I've been here a little over 7 months, and I had an opportunity to talk with Chief Lopez before he went out, and Interim Chief Smith, and I've had a chance to talk to the new incoming chief, who's also a Sara.
Oh,
we have
Lord.
To do with
yes.
What I like about the chief that is in place now, and I've met her some years ago, and she seems to be consistent in saying we need programs to prevent, to be proactive instead of reactive. Now, she's coming into a community where you have the young people can be arrested as adults at 16. So they have to look at what type of community programs they have going on, what's successful in the high schools, because we're looking at firsthand whether or not there are neighborhood disputes that can be settled early on before it rises to attention levels. And they're starting by connecting with the community. I was out with them last night, a national night out, and that's always a great time, but I've also seen them on forums making connections. And it first starts with not assuming what the community needs, but asking what they need. And you were talking about teachers. What's going on now is teachers are dealing with the same thing that police officers are dealing with. We are doing things that are not so necessarily traditional. You're having social issues that you also have to deal with in order to get your job done. And so you have some who are doing it better than others. The crime that we have going on for reductions, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I know on my campus what we're doing is we're educating kids early. We did a football orientation, and we specifically tuned in on our young men that want criminal justice careers and talking to them about the small things that can get you arrested. And I was lucky that we had Durham Police to come in. They were also alumni from NCCU to talk to them about the seriousness of what will happen, how one incident can cause you to get an inmate number. And no one is trying to use that campus as a pipeline to prison. So educating kids early so that they understand when you bring a weapon to school. So before you bring the weapon to school, make sure they know if they're having conflict with somebody, who they need to talk to, how they need to talk to them before the emotions come in and they make a quick decision about it. Having access to mediation programs. These all seem minor, but there are a lot of little things that we used to have time for that we haven't been doing, and we're assuming that everybody has the same social issues and have the same type of cultural experiences, and it's just not so.
Okay. Now, I got one more question, Mike. We do, at my school, we have career day, and we do have police officers coming to the school and talking to the students about things that are happening in the community and what they need to do to keep themselves out of trouble. So we are starting. I mean, I'm doing it, but there needs to be more, and we're going to continue to do that.
That's awesome. It needs to, well, the other piece to what I learned when working with youth, if you approach them, it has to be consistent. Oftentimes, people will get grants or different programs. They get really excited in the beginning, and then they lose all that interest, or either something happens, the programs are cut. That's why I said with some of the things we're going to have to do, it's not going to necessarily have money attached. It's going to have something more expensive than money. It's your free time. And when we do it, we're going to have to be consistent and focused on certain groups of individuals. It may even get to the point where we have to determine what type of things are putting people in school suspension and what we can do to help them, because it starts rolling off from school suspension to whatever happens to the school goes in the neighborhood, or what happens to the neighborhood goes in the school. And it seems like a quick answer is to do the arrest, or sometimes you have no choice but to make an arrest when injuries are involved and it's a felony. But what happens once the kid gets a record, studies have shown, with recidivism and the continuous of the act. So we have to educate early. We have to let them know what your actions, when you do this, the action, reaction, and what's the cause of it. What's going to happen when you do this? And we have to be continual with that message. But at the same time, we have to create opportunities. If they're cutting budgets for music programs, and some schools are thinking, and this is from nationwide, whether or not they should have some of the athletic programs because of the injuries that are involved in it, we have to start thinking about what are we going to replace those things with. And when you have recreational programs through the city that aren't able, and I'm not talking about the area that we're in now, just from a national level, if they don't have the money to do the after-school programs or run programs in the summer, and if we're not putting up money to send kids to programs so that they can have exposure beyond where they're living, how in the world are we expecting to keep them out of trouble?
What happens
you
is
know,
the hierarchy
what,
of needs.
Bring,
you said basic
they,
needs yep. are not being met in some areas because of the high levels of poverty, or because the parent or parents are not educated on how to be fiscally responsible or how to even parent. It's sad when you have police academies, and now one of the classes that they teach in police academies nationally is personal hygiene.
Oh,
and
yeah.
how to mediate
yeah.
and conflict resolution. They're not even taking, because once you put all this money investing in getting someone who looks good on paper, you want to set them up for success and not failure. So home economics and a whole lot of other classes that used to be a focus when I was coming up, it's not necessarily a focus. And we were teaching the basics of survival to kids, and it's important. So if it's not picked up in the schools, and if we don't have a large number of people going to church the way they used to, which teach you right from wrong and some discipline early on, then we as a community have to get together and say, well, how do we reinvest to make sure our kids are successful and they have that continual learning process so that they are socialized properly in the community?
Right, and I like what you said, there are consequences for your behavior, and I don't think students haven't learned that, and it's not followed through sometimes in the school system, and so that's a problem as well, and they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. So that's a huge problem that we have, in our school system, so that needs to be addressed more.
There's one thing that – go ahead, Chief.
No, good. You go ahead, because this is you're probably in line with what you were talking about.
I think a lot of the problem that comes along with what's going on now between police and the community is, especially in the black community, it's not seen as everything being done fairly. okay, it's almost like, okay, we're talking about the prison, the pipeline. You'll have a little black kid sitting in class, and he's talking and he's cutting up. And I'm not saying this right, okay, because back in my day, we didn't do that, but if we did that, we got plucked upside the head, believe it or not. But, okay, the kid's sitting there talking. The first thing a teacher that is not of that same student's color is going to do is send him to the office because he's being disruptive for the learning process, which he is.
Yes.
But then you'll have a white kid who is doing the very same thing, and they'll leave him in class because he needs to learn. Okay? You'll have a kid on the street, a black kid standing on the street corner, who is basically hanging out. I mean, there are loitering laws, but, I mean, come on. He's hanging out, and then you'll have a police officer approach him and want to know what he's doing, but then you got a white kid right down the street who they just throw their hand up and say, hey, have a great day. And I think what it is they're not seeing it as being done fairly and treated fairly, and that's where a lot of anger comes in. And that's where a lot of misunderstanding comes in. It's because if you're in Northeast Central Durham and you run 18 traffic checkpoints, I'll use an example, a week, then, yeah, you're going to get more crime in Northeast Central Durham than you will over on Coal Mill Road. When on Coal Mill Road, they're doing the same darn thing as they are in Northeast Central Durham, but they're not being hounded as much, basically, as they are in Northeast Central Durham. And stats can be skewed that way. So how does a police department approach trying to do things more fairly? So you don't see a kid says, I'm doing everything right. I'm going to class. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. But yet I'm still being ostracized and penalized and treated like a criminal on the street when a kid over here who's really cutting up, really doing the bad stuff, they pat him on the head, put him in a police car, and take him home and not to jail. How do you combat that? And how does the police department try to rectify that situation?
Some of the things starts in the training and the recruitment, the people you bring in, whether or not what type of, if they have limited experiences or not. And in your training, when you do scenarios, is the suspect always black? Is the victim always white? Do you start planting those seeds early on? Also, making sure you have early warning systems so that if once you've hired someone and something didn't show up in the psychological and the testing, you can catch them early to make sure that that practice matches your policy. Because it's already been shown that people bring biases on to the job. So you have to have ways to identify it and see whether or not you could do it through behavior modification. The other piece is look at how your department is communicating with the people they're serving. If you're teaching classes saying that if somebody raises their voice and they get excited and they're squaring off and look agitated, they're ready to fight, well, maybe you're dealing with a culture where they like to talk loud, because I know I'm animated and sometimes I talk loud and sometimes I lower my voice for effect. But the textbook explanation of an agitated, angry, violent person may be the definition of me when I'm excited and want to have a conversation. So the only way you're going to know that, because, you know, go from the theoretical to the practical, is to have your officers out in the community and not just on National Night Out. They have to be a part of the things that are going on. And the excitement I have about a campus community is we're there with them all the time, except for when they go home, if they choose to go home in the summertime or during the fall break. So when you talk about people saying, I fear for my life, we are there with the students. And we get to know them. I got a lot of new people coming in. You have transfer students, one of the largest freshman class coming in. And we're going to be there, and not just for the orientations. And they'll see us walking on campus. They'll see us on bikes. But what I'm excited about, I came to a department where it is not uncommon for the officers on their time off to come on the campus. I've had plenty of people to come to me and say that the different officers have helped them when they could have arrested them for a situation that wasn't a felony. But what they decided to do is to invest in them and then check back on them or cause them to come back in and say, I'm doing okay, and help them to find solutions for their challenges. So here we are today saying, what can we do different? If you have the latitude, that option not to arrest, we shouldn't always be thinking about the arrest factor. We should be proactively thinking about the fact that certain people act certain ways. So we need to come out in the community so they can get to know us, we can get to know them. And you talked about the basic traffic stop. Well, we have to explain to people. I mean, I have over 25 years of experience, and I did 24 concurrently with the military, and I've served outside the country internationally, and I still get nervous when I get pulled by a police officer. So we have to explain to our kids and not at the window when the police officer stops them, what to expect during a stop. And I tell you why that education piece is very, very important. I just had someone to explain to me that their daughter had a cop come behind them. It was dark. She was 19, and she had the baby in the car. And because of everything that's been happening in the country, she didn't want to stop because she didn't know if it was a real cop behind her. Because by the time she saw the light, she was a couple of blocks from home. Well, allegedly, when she goes to court, the judge said, I want to find in your favor, but you should have called 911 and say, hey, is there a cop behind me? But see, maybe she didn't think that. So we need to tell people proactively things to help them and what the behaviors are, because police jargon is sometimes different from the citizen jargon. And the only way we can come together to understand what's going on, because, you know, we're servants of the community, is to explain what we're doing. That's why when they bring in new equipment, they go out and do surveys and forums and tell people, this is what we're bringing in. This is something new you're going to see, whether it's a taser or a body camera. We are being more inclusive with our community so that they can understand what we're doing and what are our challenges, and having open dialogue and conversations.
Yeah, you know, I hear what that judge says about that. She could have called 911. One thing I would ask him as a lawyer would be like, are you going to provide her with the cell phone? And number two, if it was your daughter, what would you tell her to do? That's the two things I would ask him. Now, they can sit up there, they can say that, but, you know, what would you tell your daughter to do? And suppose the young lady's cell phone was broken, she didn't have a cell phone or whatever it was. There's no law that requires you to have one. So, then they also have put out information that if you don't feel comfortable, go to a lighted area, you know, and pull over. Just make sure you let the officer know what you're doing, wave out the window, something, let him know what you're doing. But at least, you know, then they say that, then they want to chastise somebody for that. That's the kind of stuff we're talking about, the transparency issue. You look at Eric Garner in New York City, okay? The first thing they said, with Eric Garner was the police officer that was involved in that did not use a chokehold. The police officer used a chokehold. You can see it just as plain as day. Yeah, I've been in wrestling, I've been in taekwondo, that was a chokehold. Everybody in America knows it, but the police department kept saying it wasn't a chokehold. More or less, it's kind of like this: two people are dating, one goes out to the mall one day without the other. He takes another girl to the mall, that's sitting at the table. The girl comes in, she sees him sitting at the table, okay, and she is taking pictures of him, she's taking videos of him, she's got witnesses all around. Well, then when she goes in and approaches the guy sitting at the table, the first thing he's going to say is, are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? And that's the problem that I believe that a lot of people have, is the transparency issue. It is obvious what you see. There's no doubt about what you see, but yet they're going to tell you, oh, no, it's something different. But when it comes to the regular citizen, it is exactly what you see. It's exactly what it is, and we're not going to go any further. That's it. You know, it's almost like the police officer would get the benefit of the doubt even though they're wrong, and the citizen doesn't get that benefit of the doubt even though they're wrong. And I think that's what stirs up a lot of fire within the community. And I don't know exactly how to solve that, but I will, you know, end up with this. When I worked for the city of Durham a long, long time ago, I worked in the recreation department. We had to try to come up with programs. We had some great programs for after school back then. We worked hard, and we got kids really involved in after school. We had mentoring programs. We had tutoring programs. We had people come in, do resumes with computers. You know, we tried to set up all the kind of programs that would help. And when you're sitting in meetings and you're sitting across from people, and the people that control the funds are the people that have something to say, you don't know why they have that any say in it whatsoever, but the first thing they say is, here's the catchphrase you hear in that meeting. Well, those people. That's what you hear in the meeting.
I'm going to tell you one of the things that's important. I hear that those people, I believe that communities don't necessarily know the power that they have. They have a right to know the rules of engagement of that police department. They need to know what their policies are in certain situations before a huge incident happens. Now, for North Carolina Central University, we are a CALEA Advanced Accredited University. So that's the Commission of Accreditation for Law Enforcement. So we have an outside party, a third party, checking our policies, our procedures, our operations, pulling our records to ensure that we are in line with the best practices nationally, internationally, for law enforcement. Well, a lot of people aren't accredited police departments, and maybe communities start asking, why are you not accredited? And if you're accredited, what happens when your accreditation time rolls around? That's time for a forum where the community gets to come and give feedback on how they feel about the community. there are a lot of checks and balances in the community. I'm telling you, they just have more power than they believe to demand certain things and information about the department. Now, certain things departments won't release because of strategies. You know,
right.
I can't tell you how I'm going to deal on, like we just finished active shooter training. I can't tell you how I'm going to set my men and women up and how many I have and how we're going to strategically approach a building. But I can tell you what's my rules of engagement for how I handle not an individual offer, just globally for use of force and how use of force is explained and how many cases, substantiated cases or unsubstantiated cases against the officer before we flag that record. I mean, these conversations should come ahead of time to see whether or not the right person is actually leading that agency that's supposed to be protecting the community.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the toughest jobs in the world is being a police officer because you have to make a decision, life and death decision sometimes in a split second. I mean, a situation can go from, hey, how are you doing this afternoon, officer, to a gun being pulled on you in your face, and you got to make a, you have to react to it immediately. It's not something that
right.
you can just sit there and say, well, let's just talk about this. No, it's going beyond that. No. We're not going to talk about this anymore. And it's really, really a tough job, and there's so many variables that are out there. There's so many what-ifs that are out there. And, yes, you have to put yourself in the position of the law enforcement officer sometimes to understand how he's going to react. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. Some of the situations my dad would tell me about, some of the ones I've even witnessed myself. Look, I've been hit with chairs WWE style because I dealt with juveniles and juveniles with mental issues. So, yeah, I've been hit, but I didn't hit back. And one reason is, A, because I didn't want to hurt the kid. That wasn't my job. You know, to hurt the kid. And B, it's something in me that just wouldn't let me just pop a kid in the mouth. You're not going to do that. You're just not going to do it. And police officers feel the same way. I swear, people don't understand. They think the police officers go out there and they just put on that badge and they want to go out there and rip somebody's head off. They don't want to do that. They really don't. They don't want to shoot anybody. They don't even want to hurt anybody. They just want to be able to do their job, do it effectively, and then the person with whom they're dealing with actually dictates the levels that they go to. They're going to start out with a good afternoon, a good morning, a good evening, sir, and then it depends on where it goes from there. Okay, it's all up to the individual. Most police officers aren't going to take it from level 1 to level 10. They're just not going to do it. Why? It's kind of
most want if they're properly trained, and that's how we have crisis intervention training. And for our mentally and medicated community, you're right. I don't know anyone, especially not on my department, that come to work and want to hurt someone. But you have to make sure that they're properly trained so that when they are confronted with disruptive or abusive behavior, that they have the right type of approach where they're not inciting the incident. They're trying to calm it down.
Right. And I'll leave you with this. And, it's like this. All these people – now, I'm not saying they don't have legitimate complaints. We all know that there are bad cops out there, like they're bad garbage guys, they're bad radio guys, they're bad teachers, they're bad everything. We all know that. Okay. But here's the basic bottom line. Before you go out there and start ripping these guys' heads off and you go out there and you start shooting them and you go out there and start doing everything it is you're trying to do to them, putting stuff in their food, not serving them food, just walking up to them while they're pumping gas in their car and calling them pigs and everything else, guess what? You'll turn around and you'll take your happy tail home and somebody will break in your house. And that very cop that you just ran down, that very cop you just talked about, his mother, his father, his sister, his brother, he told me he won't no good, will answer that call and will answer it professionally and will treat it like any other call. Now think about what kind of human being that is, that knows that you hate them, that knows that you will sit there and do anything to them, but they come in there and do their job anyway. Now, think about what kind of human being that is. They will throw themselves in front of a bullet to save their child. They will pull your father, sister, brother, give that life for you, even though you said what you said about them. Perfect example of that was in Dallas, Texas. Cops diving in front of children, running to they're outgunned. You could hear from
that's
the
first. That's what we do. We run towards the danger instead of running from it. That's how we're trained.
Yes, you run to the danger. They're going in there to risk their lives at a protest that definitely says they didn't like them. But they threw themselves in front of children. They ran to the fire and nobody backed down. And they lost 5 officers. Nobody backed down. Now, before you, and I know there's some bad ones, don't get me wrong, but before you go out there and you want to just rip them apart, think about that. I just want everybody to think about that. Yeah, you'll be over here and you'll say, oh, cops ain't crap, cops ain't crap. But who's the first freaking one you call when somebody go upside your head? Who's the first one you call? And that ain't crap cop comes over there and assists you, make sure you get whatever medical care you need, investigate, and hopefully, if you can, make an arrest on the assault on you. Now think about that. What kind of human being does that? It's a special kind of human being. And on behalf of the Overtime Sports Show, Linda and myself, I just want to say, Chief, to you and all your officers at North Carolina Central, because I'm up there a lot. I do the broadcasting for volleyball and softball and baseball, and I see the guys all the time. Look, the kids absolutely love your officers. I have not seen a group of young people that would rather hang out and take pictures. You guys are rock stars. They'd rather take selfies
and thank
with you,
you
guys
we love
than anything
else. We love our community. And I tell you, it didn't happen overnight, and it didn't just start when I came on that campus, and that's what attracted me to the campus. And that's something that's demanded, and not just from our department, from all departments, to understand that our focus, and Dr. Deborah Saunders White never lets us forget that the focus, if you're ever doing something and wondering if you're in the right direction, your focus should be aligned with the community we're serving, which are our students. That is the biggest investment we have, not because they're bringing revenue, but because they're bringing ideas. They have awesome minds. It is a huge responsibility. Our focus, our mission, everything is aligned with our students.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so amazing. I saw a situation one night. I was coming in to go into the gym, and this kid was agitated. I don't know exactly what happened, and he was talking to a police officer. I mean, this kid was just, I mean, he was, like, out there. He was really going, and still the police officer going, okay, turn around, which, you know, it was getting to that point where he's going to have to do something, you know what I'm saying? So he just said, son, come on, calm down. Let's go outside and talk about it. Because he knew it was cold outside, and he knew if he got him out there in that cool air, that kind of changes your attitude sometimes. And he actually
and there's
that
no
kid
audience.
Down. Yeah, it's no audience.
And when there's
and
no
then,
audience,
yeah.
You're not performing for the audience. And you're right. When there's a change in what's going on and what you're looking at, when you change that direction, you're able to distract that performance for a moment.
Yeah,
and then that slight touch
yeah.
brings them back to reality for whatever it is. That they're excited about. You only have that small percentage that's just not going to, no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to help them. But 99%,
The interesting thing about that was I saw them both of them back in the gym laughing and joking after that. The officer and the kid were laughing and joking. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, wow,
awesome.
It worked. You know
Thank
what I'm
you
saying?
Sharing
Yeah, and I'm sitting there saying, wow. Now, that is what I'm talking. As a matter of fact, I mentioned to my broadcast partner, I said, now, that's what I'm talking about. He didn't necessarily have to bust him in the head. He wanted to talk to him. You know, hey, find out. Let's find out what the issue is. You know what I'm saying? We don't even know yet. We didn't even know yet what the issue was because he was busy yelling about everything else. Let's talk about what the issue is. Well, Coach Johnson, thank you so much for appearing here on the Overtime Sports Show. Hopefully later on as time moves on, we'll get you back on the show. We'll talk about, some more policing because, you know, we're going to be moving along in this election phase. It's a political year. You know how things go. So hopefully we'll get you back on and we'll get you, you know, get discussing community policing one more time.
Thank you, and I appreciate you allowing me to have a voice tonight. And you all have an awesome evening. Eagle Pride.
Eagle Pride.
All right.
All the way. All right. Thank
all
you.
Right.
That was Chief of Police Odetta Johnson of North Carolina Central University appearing here on the Overtime Sports Show talking about policing in America. Well, Linda, that wraps it up for tonight's show. Tomorrow night, we have a friend of mine. And I tell you what, you better hold on tight because Earl Reese will be on. And Earl Reese and I kind of started our radio part of our shows together a long time ago. We'll talk about that tomorrow night. But I tell you what, it's going to be a fun night. Concussion protocols are in effect. Wear your cup. Any soft spots need to be covered because tomorrow night is going to be a wild one. Well, until tomorrow night, everyone take care. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Helping hand you out.